Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for scrumptious and salubrious all wrapped up together in one tasty treat? I know that you are. And I know that you know that means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and today's diagnosis, whining your way to health, Mediterranean style. Now, the Mediterranean diet is widely recognized as a potential template for delicious, satisfying, but also a healthful approach to eating. It has been rigorously studied and validated across many different countries, populations, and platforms. With well over 20 different nations bordering the Mediterranean, there are many, many, many different perspectives on flavor profiles that can rightly lay claim to that Mediterranean mantle. Add to that the many diverse regions, both geographically and ethnically, within the borders of these countries, and the variations increase exponentially. Yet despite the culinary coalition that could quickly devolve into chaos, there are a number of constants in both procedure and product that form the singular foundation that is the Mediterranean approach, regardless upon which country's shore you reach. The moderate consumption of alcohol, specifically wine, is one of those pillars. Moderate alcohol consumption was one of the observations that Ansel Keys got correct when he first described his findings of the region in the late 1940s and early 1950s and labeled it the Mediterranean diet that we have come to know. More recently, a subgroup analysis of the EPIC study looked into the relative positive contribution for the healthful effect of the Mediterranean diet by component. They examined the consumption of alcohol, meat, vegetable, fruits and nuts, olive oil, and legumes. The result of this inquiry was that the dominant positive contribution was attributed to moderate alcohol consumption. At almost 25% of the effect, it constituted 23.5% of the relative benefit. This is more than twice the benefit at 10.6% that's attributed to the consumption of olive oil. Now indeed, irrespective of diet, moderate alcohol consumption is associated with a reduced risk of type 2 diabetes, that modern scourge we deal with. A European meta-analysis suggested that moderate alcohol consumption is associated with a decreased fasting insulin concentration and a lower hemoglobin A1C. Now that's a marker of blood sugar level over time. And it may be through modulating such effects, through such mechanisms, that moderate alcohol consumption exercises its protective effect. Moderate wine consumption also protects against the development of chronic kidney disease, or CKD. This is a dreaded complication and is often associated with the development of diabetes. Moderate alcohol consumption was associated with a 37% lower prevalence of chronic kidney disease compared to abstainers. Additionally, such moderate alcohol consumption was also associated with a 30% less likelihood of developing cardiovascular disease compared to teetotalers. Now, there's a preponderance of data in the literature substantiating such a J-shaped relationship. That means that there's a minimizing and a minimization of developing disability and disease with moderate alcohol consumption compared to those who are alcohol abstainers. However, and we must point this out, at some point of increasing alcohol consumption, there is an increasing risk of other serious sequelae and the development of serious disability and disease. But even for those who are already afflicted with some form of the modern disability and diseases, like diabetes, following a Mediterranean approach, including the moderate consumption of alcohol, can yield benefits. Previously, alcohol-abstaining adults with type 2 diabetes were placed on a Mediterranean diet without caloric restriction, very important. They were randomly assigned 150 milliliters of mineral water, white wine, or red wine with dinner and observed for over a 2-year time course. Those that consume red wine significantly increase their high-density lipoproteins, or good cholesterol, also called HDL. They also significantly decrease the total to HDL ratio, which is a good thing. While there was a benefit to the consumption of red wine regardless of genetics, only those with an alcohol metabolizing variant, known as slow ethanol metabolizers, for those who enjoy wandering in the weeds, alcohol dehydrogenase allele ADH1B1, benefited from the consumption of both wines in terms of glycemic control, which consisted of the fasting plasma glucose, homeostatic model assessment of insulin resistance, and the hemoglobin A1C. But regardless of genetics, those who consumed either white wine or red wine at dinner reported an improvement in their sleep quality, also another important metric of good health. Diabetes is a chronic metabolic disease characterized by inflammation and associated with a range of devastating complications. Within the next 25 years, roughly 439 million people are expected to be afflicted with this condition worldwide. In 2010 alone, 12% of the global health expenditure was spent on diabetes, and treatment costs are estimated to increase to approximately $490 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars over this time frame. All that and type 2 diabetes accounts for about 90% of the cases. With strong evidence suggesting a robust correlation between moderate alcohol consumption, particularly when associated with the Mediterranean diet, and the prevention or amelioration of the symptoms and complications of diabetes, the next logical question revolves around the choice of alcoholic beverage. Is there a difference in terms of outcomes between beer, wine, and distilled spirits or liquor? A recent meta-analysis yielded very interesting results. This meta-analysis included 13 prospective studies with nearly 400,000 participants. Compared to those who abstained from alcohol consumption, both beer and distilled spirits did yield a decrease in the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. The decreased risk for both beer and spirits was around 5%. However, wine consumption was associated with a much more impressive and significant reduction in the risk of developing disease. Moderate wine consumption was associated with a 15% relative risk reduction in the likelihood of developing type 2 diabetes. While the exact mechanism by which this occurs remains elusive, wine does contain many healthful components, including many powerful antioxidants and polyphenols like resveratrol. Recent animal work has shown that resveratrol can act through the small intestine to activate an enzyme known as sirtuin-1. This enzyme deacetylates proteins that contribute to cellular regeneration. And after activation by resveratrol, there was a triggering of neurons that involved the gut, the liver, and ultimately fed back to the brain. This neural arc also led to a decrease in blood glucose. As fermented products, wines also contain compounds that have been shown to directly impact the gut microbiome and suppress the development of trimethylamine N-oxide, or TMAO. Levels of TMAO directly correlate to the risk of developing cardiovascular disease, chronic kidney disease, and diabetes. So if tradition serves us, and wine is best, what is the best amount? Well, it gets a little tricky here because, as previously mentioned, both sex, body weight, and genetics play a role. But generally speaking, the optimal effect seems to be between 1 to 2 glasses for women and 2 to 3 glasses per day for men. That also means a single glass contains about 5 fluid ounces of wine, not 750 milliliters there, Kathy Lee. So when it comes to titillating tastes and textures and a plethora of health benefits, if you want to start winning, take a Mediterranean approach and start whining today. I'm Dr. Mike, and that's a diagnosis. You are listening to Code Delicious on RadioMD.com.